Hello, everybody. Everybody, hello. Welcome to A, the Copy That show on the Twitch, but also probably for you watching in the future on youtube.com/copythat. Today is a show. It is May 9th, 2022, and today we are going to be talking about something that we get a lot of questions about and have been asked a ton, because it's something that every single copywriter and every single marketer has to deal with. Which specifically is how to do research, what to research, when to stop researching, what the process looks like, how one gets information about stuff and things and the world, especially since all we ever do is just sit around and read marketing books and consume no other content whatsoever. So how do we overcome that particular obstacle? Also, our own illiteracy. We are, of course, copywriters, not copy readers. And so once you have all that like taken into account, how does one get information for a particular topic, especially for a field or something like that, that we just have no experience in? So that is the topic of today's show. And by the end, you might know some things about how we research stuff and how you can research stuff too. And that's the end of the stream. Okay, bye guys. Have a lovely day.
Yeah, that was it peaking. Now we're ready for the decline.
Will not get better.
I think there are like several parts to research. It's like you can sort of like divvy it up into what product research, competitor research, user research, right? Your people that are actually going to be reading your stuff. So I think we should be deciding on which one we want to start with. So long we sort of cover all of them, unless you guys have any more components to it.
I think we should start with something even more fundamental. How do people know what they should be researching?
You have to start somewhere. And in my eyes, the best place to start is with the product. If you've been hired to write something for someone who already has a product, you know, you're not involved in the creation of the product, someone has a product or a service, and you need to make people buy that, then you have to start with what the product actually is. In essence, why did they create it? And if you're ever working with someone and they can't answer that question, I think that's a red flag personally, because you need to have somewhere to start. If someone just says, oh, I made this just because I think it is a good idea, and then you ask, okay, why? And they have no reply. That's very, very difficult to start actually selling a product like that, or even starting the research process. A phrase I like to fall back on is that markets are problems, and every product, every service should be solving a problem. And if it's not solving a problem, it's quite difficult to start researching for it. I would say 90% of the things you're going to write for in your career are going to be problem-solving products. So yeah, you need to start with, right, why was this created? What problem is it actually solving? So in my opinion, that's the place that you should start with research.
I'm going to push back on that for a quick second. I actually don't agree that most products are problems. If not all products are problems, then we might have to start somewhere else in terms of our research. And I'll give you an example of exactly what I mean. What problem do automatic car windows have? Like, what problem does that solve?
What, so an automatic, as in like a window you can scroll up?
Yeah, so if you're in a car, you can press a button to make a window go down and then pull it back to make a window go up. And then that replaced the manual crank for windows. Mm-hmm. So what problem does that solve?
I think maybe then we're moving into the definition of what a problem is. And my answer to that would be, a problem is also talking about like, if something is a status symbol, there are different kinds of problems. So there's something like a functional problem. I think I spoke about this my first time on the show, actually. You've got like functional problems where there are things that are clear, there's a pain and you're actually alleviating that pain because someone finds something difficult or they think it could be done quicker. And then you've got like tribal status problems where someone wants something because the perception of it is somehow better, whether that's to be admired or to feel like you're more complete as a person. And that kind of moves into a world of, yeah, what is a problem? Bearing in mind, I'm usually coming at this from an e-commerce angle. I say 90% of the time, there's a problem a very obvious problem that product is solving.
Alex, I actually really like the way that you phrase it. The way that you frame problems is not like, I have obstacle, need thing to overcome obstacle, because if that was the simple definition of problem, then automatic door windows don't make sense. but in terms of like emphasizing convenience, emphasizing luxury, emphasizing status, and the problems people feel, the lacks that people feel in that, then yeah, then that becomes a problem, that those sort of intangible problems that people have. The first step for any research is kind of understanding whom you're writing to and how you're framing what you're writing about.
I would say that, and jointly, what is the thing that you're marketing? Obviously, the audience is going to frame the way in which you talk about the thing. But if you don't understand, for example, what automatic rolling up and down windows are, the role that those play in someone's life, for example, is going to be hard to understand.
That is actually like one of the components that makes up the broader question of why was this created? Why does this thing exist? If you're asking someone, right, why did you make this in the first place? Ideally, what you also are probing into with that is, who did you make this for? Like, who? What's the market out there who wants to buy this? With automatic windows, if someone has created it and you ask them, right, why did you create this? You're like, oh, well, you know, well, it costs more money, but people who can afford to pay a lot, they're going to love this because it's a brand new thing. It's like the next generation of features on a car. And then that then brings you into like, okay, so we've created it for people who have have more money than they really need to spend on a car. It goes beyond just getting from A to B. It's not so functional. It then becomes, they want the newest thing.
One thing that's really important to keep in mind is that there are multiple levels of research one should do depending on the job. Whoa, what's going on? Hey guys, something weird is happening to the stream.
Oh, what did you mess up this time?
It's not me this time, I swear.
God, this is horrible.
It is I, Daniel Throssell, Australia's number one copywriter, Sean's number one nemesis, and the number six nemesis of the Copy That crew.
Daniel, you son of a mother.
Wait, we have nemesises?
Actually, it's nemeses.
Silence! My copy network of spies tell me that you blokes are trying to step on my very expensive market detective turf. And I have hijacked your call to come and tell everybody not to listen to these copy dweebs, but instead listen to me, the one and only Daniel Throssell, when I tell you that there are different levels of research and the amount of research you do should be different depending on the job you are doing.
You kangaroo-eating scalawag, you'll never get away with this.
Weren't we just saying the exact same thing?
Ha! Your pathetic following is highly unlikely to learn the secrets of market research listening to the likes of you. For example, I doubt you have told them that in many cases, you can actually do all the research you need to do just by talking to your client. Because if you're talking to a low-level client, all you need to do is make them happy with the copy, and the happiest copy is the copy that they think is going to be fantastic. I doubt you are telling them things like that, or that surveys are one of the best places to get research data if you can't find anything online. Most people just don't know how to do them right because they ask stupid questions like, would you buy this product? Which are a universally terrible idea to ask. And finally, I doubt that you have told them the most important, the most hidden secret of all, which is that talking to people is really, really overrated. And it's highly unlikely that you are going to be able to call up one of your customers and get them to confess to you their secrets the way they are going to do on a place like Reddit. I bet you're not telling them things like that!
I don't know, dude. That sounds a lot like what we've been saying all along.
You dare doubt me?!
Not doubt, so much as wonder what makes your research methods so special.
Well, I guess you've left me with no other choice then.
What's he doing?
I think he's having a stroke.
Kidnapped your friend and taken him to a place I call the Dark Room. And if any of you people watching this want to see where I've taken him, go to persuasivepage.com and opt in for my email list.
No one go to persuasivepage.com. If you sign up at persuasivepage.com, Daniel will just send you entertaining story-based emails every day and teach you how to engage a list.
Oh, much more than that. By the time your friend finishes my parallel welcome sequence at persuasivepage.com, he will be completely indoctrinated into my ways and probably will be a few thousand dollars poorer from having bought several of my courses, including Market Detective, where you can learn all the secrets of market research that these people have not been telling you on this call.
You'll never get away with this.
Oh, But I already have.
Well, that was completely unexpected and totally unplanned. Alex, one thing that the evil Daniel Throssell mentioned during his invasion of our stream was this notion of like actually talking to the client. And that seems to be perfectly in line with like what you were saying vis-a-vis e-com clients and getting from them what you need for your copy.
A perfect example of this recently, or a few months ago, I worked with a business that were like a gluten-free snack brand. They made this product, but they didn't make it because of anything. They just made it because they like had it left over. When they asked me to come on board with that, I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds good. I asked them the question. I said, why did you make this? Like, was there demand for it? And they basically just said to me, no, we just kind of had the ingredients. So we thought we'd make something and just sell it. Like, can you sell it for us? And I was like, okay, I can try. I said to them, I don't know if this is going to work. And went to do it, like it just didn't work. You know, we made some sales, but ultimately the big problem was that they were only selling this one product and they wanted to sell it through a website just for this one wafer bar. But people didn't want to go to a website just for one, like basically this kind of, you know, candy bar where they're not getting anything else for it. It's very hard to make that appealing to get someone to spend all their money, go to a particular site and then buy it all. And that was because it didn't start with, oh yeah, we made this because X, we made it because of a specific reason. We made it for a specific person. And I think you can catch that very early on if you just ask your client the question, why did you make this?
I usually don't start with the why did you make this. When I've asked that in the past, I tend to get like a very rehearsed, like mimicking existing marketing type answer. If you ask that question and the answer you get sounds kind of like bullshit, doesn't sound believable, or just isn't compelling, I would just start having a conversation with your client kind of about like how they got to this point, how their business has got to where it is now, what it is that they're looking at, because I found that people tend to be way more willing to open up about their personal journey. And so if you make it about them, they will tell you far more personal things than if it's about their product, which they've kind of had to hold up as they pride and joy for however long. And in doing so, it won't always be super clear, but every now and then you'll see these like little tidbits about, oh, this thing that this person said is really important to them. So a great example of this is a few months ago, I was working with a basically online platform for mental health care, and the whole focus was for expats, so people living outside of their home country, who they identified as these people need access to mental health care in their own language, in the privacy of their own home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you kind of just put their features and benefits on paper, it sounds the same as BetterHelp. It sounds the same as any of these way larger, already popular apps for therapy. And when I talk to like the marketing people, they more or less would tell me the exact same features and benefits. However, when I was sat down with the CEO and just had a conversation about, okay, well, why did you make this? Who got the idea for this? The conversation was way more personal. It was like, you know, I actually found myself in a situation in which I was feeling like I had no help. I felt isolated. I felt yada, yada, yada. And from that, you get the foundation for your voice of customer research. And so once I heard those feelings, I could then go online and look for other people who had those feelings and see what kind of words they were using to describe their issues. I would absolutely recommend just having conversations with people about themselves to get a little bit more out of that if the direct question doesn't work for you.
If you just listen to people and listen to what they're talking about. And that can be on Reddit, it can be on a forum, it can be in conversations at bars. Just listen to what is top of mind for people. If you just listen to the right people talking about stuff, you'll hear them tell you what they want. And so here's an example. Manny was, he lives in like West Palm Beach, Del Rey, that area. He's a single man, he's been going out to bars. And so when he has conversations with women, all the shotties say and have been talking about recently NFTs and getting in on NFTs. And so he says, okay, now's the time to write a promo about NFTs because the shoddy index has spiked for NFTs. And he says that, you know, if you go back in time and look at how the shoddy index has changed, Scott Bardelli, great, great copywriter. Scott was gambling at a casino, and this is like 4 or 5 years ago. And everybody there who, and they were all like in the standard financial newsletter buyer demographic, you know, a little bit older, a little bit more conservative, a little bit more grizzled. And he was listening to them talk with each other, and they were all talking about pot stocks. And so he sat down. He's like, I have to write a pot stock promo. Wrote it in 2 weeks. And that's how he came up with the $50 penny pot stock blueprint. And that was like a control front end for like 4 years. You listen to people and listen to what's on the top of their mind, and then find a way to lean into or fulfill whatever that desire may be.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think what this conversation is really bringing up as well is there are a few different ways that products get created. Financial in particular is a very idea-based market. Like, you know, you can come up with an idea, and like you've said to me before, you know, often ideas for copy create products rather than there being a product and then copy gets written around it. It's very different to, say, e-commerce, where you're probably going to be writing for people who already have a product that they want you to sell. If you have the ability to create a product around ideas from the get-go, the hit rate may even be a little bit higher from people who just have an idea for a product straight away to like create. I think the hit rate for the in the financial space is probably higher for successful pieces. I've now just kind of moved into a position where I can now create products myself. In e-commerce, obviously it's a lot harder because it's not just you hire some people to like write something for you. It's you have to deal with the actual manufacturing of the product and then the logistics and then toting up all the costs that come with that. You need to try to be more certain with the research, because it's a lot harder to just say, hey, here's an idea, let's test it quickly, because oftentimes there's more of a process for actually getting it to market. This is the exact map of research that I follow: product, competitor, and then market. In other words, you know, the product slash client, the people who are selling things in a similar space or the same thing, and then the audience that you want to be writing to. Like, those are the three bits of research I split out into, because I'm usually starting with a product. Find the low-hanging fruit. Find the information that's already there, already very easy. If you're working with someone who has an established business, dive into the people who use the service already. Because if you already have a base of people using something, there's probably a reason they're using something. So what do they all have in common? Is there something they have in common? Are there a few different groups that crop up? That's very important. So if you can get customer data, do that. Ask your client, can I have access to your email list, your analytics, whatever they have accessible? Starting with an ideal client is, I think, a good way to go. So once you've had a look at the people who are already in the client's list, or if they don't have them, that's where it gets a bit more in depth. And I'd recommend watching my 6-hour video, which goes into research, because it's a whole kind of other method. But if they don't have any customers yet, then you're going to need to rely quite heavily on what people are saying out in the world, like what you mentioned, Sean. And you can do that online. A mistake I think new copywriters make with finding an ideal client is thinking that this needs to be ultra precise and you cannot like steer away from it at all. Don't think of it like that. Don't think of it as like, oh, I need to mention the fact that they are a man and that they are 30 and that they have a 40K plus job and that they live in a suburban area. You don't need to mention all these things. It just helps you get an idea of the kind of people you're probably going to be writing to.
Just because you're filling up a research doc with research, you're not going to use all of it. And you don't need to use all of it precisely. As long as it helps you and doesn't hinder you in that process, then it's a useful process.
The most important part, in my opinion, of the ideal client section, the reason they need the product, and then stage of awareness. Like those really are what you're going to be writing about most in copy. You're not going to be talking about how old they are. That just gives you a flavor, I guess, is the best way to describe it. But yeah, for the ideal client, asking your client who they have designed the product for is a good way to just get an idea if they have no customers yet and if they have no idea. So just ask them. And then you can corroborate that later when you actually do your market research. Competitor research, I think in e-commerce, at least, is such an important thing, because if there are other businesses already doing what you want to do, you can probably also make money out of it. There's an asterisk there, there's a big asterisk, but generally speaking, if there are people who are already targeting the market you want to be targeting, they're already solving a problem that you want to be solving, or they're selling a product similar to the product that you have, then you can likely make a success out of a business idea. So understanding exactly how they're doing it is a big boon for you to just have. And then lastly, onto market research, which is, if we were playing favorites, the most important section of research. This is what people are saying, what are real people actually talking about in the world? What do they care about? How are you going to appeal to them? And ultimately, this is the thing that should lead everything else. The name of the game here is voice of customer data, or as I call it, indirect voice of customer data, because you're not relying on focus groups or surveys, which are useful. But for this particularly, I prefer to not rely on that to begin with out in the world, because I prefer just seeing what people are talking about when they don't think they're being probed.
Every prospect has desires, notions, and identifications. That's actually been important for your career, Alex, because one of the things that you often work with and often do is like identify something as gluten-free and then market it as being a snack for gluten-free people, or, you know, oh, hey, there's no like no meat or animal-derived products in this. Boom, we're going to tap the vegan niche.
I find a lot of new copywriters enjoy the research process. And once they get into it, once they break past that initial wall of like, where do I look? They're like, oh God. And they put so much into documents and they're like, great, that's good. They're highlighting good stuff. They're categorizing it, all cool. When it comes to arranging and sorting that research, they break down because they're not sure, what do I cut? What do I not focus on? And the way I've kind of overcome this problem in my career is, this is where some nuance comes in, where it can't be so mechanical, because you do have to just start by using a gut feeling and saying, right, well, these things seem to group in the same kind of pain. These are all revolving around, for example, these seem to talk about joint pain a lot and people seeing their dogs limping. Okay. So like that in itself is a pain. People don't want to see this one thing. You see things, a lot of people complaining about that. You summarize all of those through the IVOC, the IVOC data you already have recorded, and then you need to rank it. Ranking it is very difficult, though, I think, for a lot of people. The easiest way I can describe it and how I do it is you're looking at both the frequency at which these summaries come up and the intensity of which they're spoken about. That's how I do it. That's how I recommend you do it. And I can usually tell which juniors have done research for hours and which haven't, because the ones who have done it for hours just know where to rank things.
We have to talk about the elephant in the room. Luke, how did you escape from Dan Throssell's evil clutches? How did you bust out of the dark room?
I had to fight a bunch of his henchmen. It was terrifying. I'm still extremely sweaty. I don't know how I've managed to escape, but I have. Because of it, I am going to share Throssell's his secrets, but I'm not going to share it everywhere. I'm going to share it in a special report that I'm going to be uploading to the Patreon. I'm not sure when yet, because I need to like collect all my thoughts. I put it into one specific dossier, and then I'm going to give it to all you guys. So stay in tune for that. I'm just really glad I made it.
we're really glad that you're safe. And, you know, I got to ask, does he smell? He seems like the kind of guy who like has like a weird sort of funk to him.
Yeah, he smells like kind of like a old musky room.
Alex, you have an incredibly comprehensive process that has been working for you for years. But I got to ask, if you're getting paid $10 to write a 1,000-word article, should you be doing all that research?
No.
Okay.
It should reflect how much you're being paid. You know, I would say do the length on research, especially if you are going to be benefiting from how many sales get made. But also, if someone has paid you a rate that you're happy with, I recommend doing this research process, because it's a very, very thorough way. And I guarantee you more than what 90, 95, even 99% of most content writers and copywriters are doing.
I mean, like if you're being paid like $10 for a 1,000-word article, you just open the shit faucet and you just get to it. You just write whatever comes to mind and you make sure you just run it through Grammarly. And then it's like, here you go, buddy. Hope you like your shit article.
The way in which I understand research, the end goal is not to know the audience. The end goal is not to know the product. The end goal is not to know what people think about the product or their situation. The end goal of research to me is to end up with a compelling idea that ties together the psychic state of your audience with the product or offer you have in a way that makes them, it's going to intrigue them and make them want to engage with whatever your sales vehicle is. We're thinking about marketing something I'm getting paid $10 to work on. I'm just going to sit around for 5 minutes and think, okay, well, how would I sell this?
You know, if somebody is offering you, you know, let's say $300 and you need to, to write an article. And it's a piece of content. And you're going to have to decide like what levels of research you need to do. And part of that process is you need to understand like, what is the content for? Who is it going to? What is it going to do? And like, that's oftentimes all the research that you really need to do. If you're reading enough, if you're consuming enough, if you are familiar enough with the genres and the milieus that you're working in. If you go to a client, and the client says, hey, I need a 1,000-word article. I'm going to pay you $300 for it. You need to go, okay, cool. What are the topics that you want to cover? And they're going to say, blah. You can ask a question like, do you need this to be like search engine optimized? Mm-hmm. And they'll go either yes or no, what does that mean? In which case, well, then you have a chance to upsell them if they say no. But if they say yes, then you know part of your research needs to be on keywords. So that's all going to be baked into what you're doing. As part of your pay, you're expected to do this. One of the big mistakes that I see a lot of people making when they deliver content, especially content that's meant to have some sort of search engine pull, they won't do any of that research. They won't incorporate keywords. They won't even think about it. They won't embed it. They won't work on it. They just go blah, 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 I'm going to write. And then they look at other listicles with a similar topic and then they copy paste those particular ideas and boom, they have an article done. That is, for me, a shortcut path to ensuring that I'll never want to work with you again. Okay, there's the, I'm going to poop out an article and not do any research. There's that level of pay. And you need to decide for yourself what that pay looks like. And then you go a level up. And I would say the most basic stuff is ask a client, like, kind of what they're looking for. So that's part of the research. And then, like, make sure that you're not saying stuff that contradicts what the client says. And then once you kind of like get beyond that, once you get into like getting paid thousands of dollars to produce a sales page or a piece of content or a string of content or things like that, then you start needing to go more in line with what Alex was just presenting, which is doing more in-depth research into like who the audience is, you know, getting from the client information about what their demography is, what their sales look like, etc., etc. You don't need to know that if you're just getting paid $300 to write one article.
I think like as a freelancer, it's particularly hard because when you're a beginner, you should just take on any work you get. You know, it's just like about getting better, and you might not do the most amount of research simply because you're paid like low amounts of money, right? Still, it would behoove you to do more research because if you do provide a good quality piece of content or copy, then the client is obviously more likely to work with you in the future. I definitely think that for intermediate copywriters, and I saw that for myself when I was still looking for in-house gigs or like, you know, larger paying retainers, is that like, then you have to become very selective who you're working with. Who you're working with can sort of like relate to like how much research you do. Because if you're like, well, this is a publishing house, they're really good. I know they're good. I know that they will treat me well. Well, you better like put your best foot forward, make your best content as you can so that you're more likely to work with them in the future. But if you're working with some random, I don't know, entrepreneur that hasn't even verified their idea and you're making like a landing page for them, sure, you still need to produce as like the best quality you can, right? But you don't have to go to the same length as you would with like a great opportunity. So my point being, you need to sort of assess, you know, what is this opportunity and do I really care about this opportunity? Or do you view it more in a way of like, well, this is more just about me building a portfolio. So your research can also depend on what stage you're at as a copywriter.
If you know whom you're speaking to, well, you need to go to the person you're speaking to and find out what they actually want. And you can go to Reddit, you can go in person, you can have conversations with people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Once you have an understanding of the person you're writing to and you have a sort of like a finger on the pulse of them, well, then you need to come up with like good creative angles and ideas. One really, I guess, famous example was there was a service sold by Agora Financial. It was an option selling service. You guys don't need to understand how options work. All you need to understand is that if you sell a put, you can get paid cash instantly. One night, Joe Schrieffer was watching with his wife a video about street magic and street magicians. And they would just like walk up to people on the street and he would just like manifest dollar bills in front of their face. And so Joe was like, that's brilliant. And so he created a promo for this product that it already existed, where basically he just went to random people on the street of Baltimore and had a laptop with him that was connected to a Wi-Fi hotspot and had them like punch in the trades that he instructed. And then he would give them the cash that landed in his brokerage account as a result of the trades that they made. That counts as research. Him in bed with his wife, watching trash TV. One idea that I had for a promo was about algorithmic trading and how it's sort of created this sort of asymmetries and problems and imbalances and inefficiencies in the market, especially when algorithms go haywire. I read Michael Lewis's Flash Boys. And the cool thing about reading books is author has thought about stuff more than you. They've written stuff better than you can. And they've provided all their research for you. So you just take that and put it into your stuff. You can't find the information in books. Most of that hasn't made it to the Google yet.
Yes.
And so not only are you presenting good information, presenting compelling information, you also are tapping into information that people can't easily find online. So you have set yourself apart from most of your competitors in the copywriting space. There's just a million examples like that. And so whenever I start a promo or whenever I have like an idea, one of the first things that I'll do is like, I'll try to find a book on that topic. Mike Palmer, the greatest front-end copywriter of all time, he wrote End of America. He has sold more than you ever will. He spends at least 1 to 2 days a week in the library. He works from the library. He just goes and he reads and he works from the library.
The funny thing with that is like, if you actually do get your thoughts and your ideas from books, first of all, if you were to write content, you start ranking very high because you're bringing unique content, like you said, Sean. And second of all, you're actually just becoming an expert in whatever that you're writing about, right? And then you can go from $30 to, you know, $3,000 for just one article, simply because you have actual expertise and you can actually position yourself as someone with expertise, be that in health, fitness, nutrition, financial, anything really, tech. It's like, that's when you can make really, really big amounts of money.
For everyone in the chat, make time to do interesting things and to read interesting things that are, yes, I think pop culture, I think is important to understand, mm-hmm. but also do just read things. Even if you're not sure, never be at a point where you're like not doing something. I think there should always be something, and this is just my personal philosophy, maybe this is wrong, but like I think you should always be doing something that's a bit weird or a bit like mm-hmm. outside the norm, reading something, watching something, partaking in a hobby that like most people wouldn't even haven't heard of or like wouldn't do. For me, like I love history. So like I tend to look at random events and people and buy like old biographies from history. And I love just doing that because you do pick up things. I'm not saying that is a surefire way to do incredible research and find something, but I have this book here, which was from like, I don't know, like the 1960s or something. And it's just about a commander in the English Civil War. And I bought it a while ago and I used something in that, which was just a small conflict, a little engagement he was involved in with his men on horseback. It was just really unorthodox, really interesting. But that just sparked an idea that I then wrote on like an article, effectively an advertorial for an agency I was working with at the time. And it performed really well. That doesn't happen every month. That's not like a crazy thing that's like, oh yeah, you're mm-hmm. sure you're definitely bound to find something. But little things like that just happen. And you find little references or things that are interesting and you will find they spark ideas or are relevant to things that you're writing about.
Do you guys want to know my secret weapon for getting creative ideas under a crunch? Instead of using Google as a search engine, I use Twitter. Because Twitter has all the world's worst ideas in off-hinge content. And so I just did a Twitter search for krill oil. And it starts off with, you know, some generic, oh my God, here's some studies and stuff. Then you get into the memes. You get into the people posting their own experience with krill oil. People talking about dragons. It will take you places. Twitter is really cool because it is not nearly as like dense in terms of communities as something like Facebook or maybe Reddit are. And so there are a lot of different narratives about the same idea. There are lots of different like small pockets of communities. And so you can find lots of different kinds of VOC data on the same topic. And so whereas if you go to Reddit, a subreddit for something will tend to have kind of like more or less consistent ideas about things. Twitter will give you a lot of different perspectives on the same thing in a way that is blunt and raw that a lot of other online places are not.
I like Quora too, but it's a little more structured and a little more filtered, I think. Quora's it's probably also moderated more. So I feel like you could probably get more raw ideas on Twitter.
I wouldn't trust Twitter as much, but it's a good place for inspiration. Quora is pretty good usually.
Make fake Facebook accounts, get into groups and ask questions that you want to ask. Don't use people's profile picture. Don't use actual pictures of people though. Like that's bad. Don't do that. You know, just do like, I don't know, an album cover or like a photo of your dog, something like that. Make loose Facebook accounts, go into Facebook groups that you're interested in, engage in conversations people are having in comment sections. And one, because it means you can just get in there. And two, because you can then start to ask specific questions. There is a meter within this of how gray you would like to be, because I think you can basically get to a point where you're almost committing fraud, which I wouldn't recommend. But the things that are innocent, like just going in and just seeing how these people talk or wanting to ask kind of innocent questions, I think that's like perfectly fine. A gray hat one, and this is like really kind of depends how you feel. Nothing to do with the internet, nothing to do with online. I don't drive, so I take the bus a lot. I don't wear headphones when I'm on the bus, unless like it's like a really long journey and there's no one else on. I try and sit behind a big group of people and I just look at what they're doing on their phones. I will listen to what they're talking about. If there's people talking, I will just watch. And in the mornings particularly, this is really good. Perfect example, the other day, there was a woman and she was, you know, dressed very nicely. She was obviously going to work somewhere. And she was just scrolling through Instagram and they were all makeup videos. And she was going on like stories and looking through it and clicking links. And I think just looking at how people actually behave, again, this is more for me and what I do, because I'm also very into strategy as well as copy. But like the things they click on, what they go between, like what pages they seem to be attracted to, what features they're using, very, very useful. Because if you're doing that like every day, every other day, you start to get an idea of, oh, maybe I should, if I've seen like three people use this certain function, like Instagram shop or something, maybe I should consider using that in my business. That's kind of gray hat. Depends how much you want to be a nice person and not encroach on other people's privacy. But I think it, as a marketer, it's your duty to understand how humans work.
I think that one's less gray hat than the other one.
Oh, there we go.
If I want to get proof, or if I have an idea that involves like some sort of specialized knowledge, I will just call people and pretend to be a customer. For example, I was writing a huge report on reverse mortgages. So what I did was I called several insurance and mortgage lenders and just asked them a bunch of questions about reverse mortgages. They are trying to sell me. So I just take their selling points and those go in the article.
This is proper espionage.
Research.
No, I do that with every competitor that I identify in a space. I will message them, and emails can be as simple as like, I'm thinking about buying your product, but, and then what are the most common objections? Just saying like, whatever, and just seeing how they deal with it.
You almost become like an investigative journalist. I actually do think a lot of copywriters could gain a lot from reading about journalism and like how journalism, like journalists write. I've done it for the past month or so, and it's really improved my own writing. And also how I think about writing and research.
I was in a meeting with my partners in Japan a few hours ago. One of the analysts there asked me, how would I be able to look up option trading, like volume data on the S&P 500 E-mini futures? Very niche, right? Very specific. I was just like, well, I don't know the answer to that. But I went to Google and I just typed in CBOE E-mini futures volume data. Took me to the CME group, and they have an entire page dedicated just to that information and charting it out. In the span of a minute, I went from this person asking me a question and me going, I don't know, let me find the answer. And because I knew more or less how to search for something, I was able to find it very, very quickly. And so you're going to find that when you're writing an article, or when you're like responding in meetings, or when you're doing research for copy, like sales copy, a lot of this kind of stuff is just ad hoc. And it comes from knowing the right questions to ask and more or less knowing generally where to find stuff. So I think we've all shared a copywriting hack, except for you, Luke.
Oh no. Well, let's talk about sales copy, I guess. I like to analyze the pages and the websites of other competitors. So if you have an Ahrefs subscription, you can just plug the website address of the one that you're working for, and it will give you like the top 10 competitors. If you just open all those competitors and you just check out what they're doing, you just kind of like funnel hack their funnel, then you can get a lot of information and a lot of useful selling points that you might be able to use or draw inspiration from for your own copy. So that's one hack. That's the quickest one I could think about right now, but I'd love to think about it a little bit more and actually share something elaborate maybe on the Patreon.
Is it the same patreon.com/thecopythatshow where people can access to many more videos on research, including a 2-hour long video in which Sean researched, theory crafted, and then wrote a newsletter for one of his very own personal businesses? Is it that patreon.com/thecopythatshow?
Yeah, I think it was that patreon.com/thecopythatshow where I also like broke down how I researched like a promo that I had begun. Okay. And like how I actually began thinking about the big idea as it relates to that.
Is it the same one where Alex is going to share his e-commerce adventures on and like how he's going to build a store right from scratch and like show how that whole process works?
If it is that one, it might be the same one where Luke gives weekly updates on our adventures, new videos, and never before seen content that doesn't even go to YouTube.
Wow.
Is it that one? Is it that one?
All of that's available on the patreon.com/thecopythatshow.
Whoa. Enough about patreon.com/thecopythatshow. What was that about YouTube?
YouTube.com/thecopythatshow. Don't even get me started.
YouTube is like this video sharing platform. It's kind of niche. You may not have heard of it before. But yeah. You know the thing I love, and this is what I do genuinely love about Copy That, and even before I was a host that I love, is that you don't have to spend $499, $199, even $49.99 on anything. You can just spend like, what is it, $5.99?
Yeah, it's like $6 like for like the standard tier.
And then that's for a month. And then you can just download all the stuff, screenshot it all, and then unsubscribe at the end, because then you get all that shit for like $5, $6. Luke.
It's also like, sure, you can like sign up right now and you can just download all the content, but you're going to be missing out on the weekly updates, because that's like the real value you're really getting. You're getting like what, 44 posts that we made before. So you can view all of those. And then every week you're getting a little bit of extra content that we've made that's only exclusive to people on Patreon.
Guys, I think that was a show. All of you, my friends, viewers, everyone watching, thank you so much. Have a lovely week. Go secure some bags. Listen to rap music. Have a good time. Consume media. Yada, yada. I'll see you on the flip side. Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Bye, guys.